We are going to talk about one of the Jewish feast days. And just a little background, for Sunday mornings for the last session, this has been a class that we've had down in Adult 1 and 2 is a class on insights into the Jewish offerings and Jewish holy days. And so those of you here Sunday morning know that I filled in for Dan Jenkins on Sunday morning also, and we kind of did a we basically did a wrap-up of this particular class, and then I didn't realize I was teaching tonight, and I was like, oh, well, cool. I'm teaching tonight, too. I'll just bring in something else that we didn't get to cover in that class. And so we did not get to talk about the Feast of Tabernacles. I know that's just like, that's like life-changing information for you, right? You're like, oh, yes, finally, a class on the Feast of Tabernacles. I've been waiting my whole life, and it's probably not what you're thinking, right? But you go back and you study these holy days that the Jews had, and they're quite interesting and informative and certainly very detailed as you go through and piece together the information that God gives. Now, I'm not going to go back and rehearse everything that has been discussed regarding these feast days, but let me ask you this. Are we under the covenant today? Are we under the law today that had those feast days as a part of it? Are we to observe these feast days today, these holy days today? Are Christians to observe them today? No, we don't. We're not under that covenant. In fact, that has been taken out of the way. We're under a better covenant based upon a better sacrifice and given better promises, what the book of Hebrews says. But does that mean that now that you're not under the old covenant, that you can just take your Bible and you can find that page about two-thirds of the way through that says the New Testament, you find that page, and so can you just take your Bible and go rip right down and say, okay, I don't need the first part of this, I'll just keep the second part of this. Is that what you can do? No, because you're not supposed to add to or take away from the Bible, right? So if you rip it in half, bad, no, that's not what that verse means. But are there not some things still in the Old Testament for us to benefit from? Yes? Romans 15 and verse 4 says what? Those things that are written aforetime were written for our benefit, for our learning. Is there anything for us to learn from the Old Testament? Yeah, there's a lot for us to learn. Is there anything for us to learn from the Feast of Tabernacles? Some of you may be thinking, what is the Feast of Tabernacles? And I'm glad you asked that tonight because we're going to talk about that. So what I want you to do, we're going to start in Leviticus 23, basically we're going to be in Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, probably a little piece of Exodus I might throw in there, but turn to Leviticus chapter 23, and that's kind of where we're going to start tonight. But I want you to, as you go back here, I want you to imagine that you were a Jew who was a slave in Egypt, okay? You were a slave in Egypt. Are you an Egyptian?
No.
No. You don't walk like an Egyptian. You don't talk like an Egyptian. You don't look like an Egyptian. You're not an Egyptian, okay? You are an Israelite who was a slave in Egypt. Did you have it easy?
No.
No, you didn't have it easy. Did they make it hard for you? Intentionally make it hard for you? Yes. And then God comes along and he delivers you out of Egypt. And when you get out of Egypt, I'm going to ask this question differently than I was just going. Let me ask it this way. When you get out of Egypt, should you be happy? I said should. Should you be happy when you get out of Egypt?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're a slave and you're not a slave anymore. You're free now. All right, let me ask the question the way I was going to ask it now. You're out of Egypt. Are you happy now? Should. Freddie's back to the word should. Should be. These Israelites, what did they do a lot when they got out of Egypt? They complained. You thought your kids complained a lot, and they did. These folks complained. Can you imagine being Moses? Wow. I mean, how old was Moses? How old was Moses? 80 years old. He's 80 years old. Can you imagine being 80 years old? You've got a couple million baby Israelites. They're not babies, but they're acting like babies. You know what I'm talking about? And you imagine being Moses like, God, you saved me to get to be 80 for this? I mean, did you ever say to your kids in the back seat, if you keep acting that way, I'm going to turn this car around, and you'll finish that sentence? Can you imagine Moses? You keep acting like this, I'm going to turn this caravan around. And anyway, these complainites were something else. But they come to Mount Sinai. They leave Egypt. They cross the Red Sea. They get down to Mount Sinai. How long are they at Mount Sinai? They are there for 1 day, week, month, or year. Which one of those? They're there for 1 year. That's a long time. Why are they there for a whole year?
They have to be taught.
They have to be taught. Okay. So is there a lot for them to learn?
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot for them to learn. While we think about Mount Sinai, and what do we think about God giving them at Mount Sinai? Ten Commandments. That's what we think. All right, so, hey Siri, what's 10 divided by 613? All right, so 1.5%. All right, thanks, Siri. All right, so the Ten Commandments are 1.5%. That's not even right. That can't be right. Is that right? There were 613 commandments. Somebody do the math on this. Cindy, you're good at math. So there's 613 commandments, and yeah, I guess it's right. 1.5%. The Ten Commandments make up 1.5% of the entirety of the commandments of the old law. Was there a lot for them to learn besides the Ten Commandments? I mean, we teach our kids to memorize the Ten Commandments, and maybe they taught their kids to memorize the Ten Commandments. But there's 603 other commandments in the law. So, right, Merritt, yeah, they're there at Mount Sinai for a year so that they can learn. They're in school. Why else are they there? What else are they doing there for a year? They're building something. Building a tabernacle. So you read through the book of Exodus. As you read through the book of Exodus, you get to the latter half of the book of Exodus, and you have the instructions and the actual building, construction, the instructions and the construction of the tabernacle in the last half of the book of Exodus. Is that going to take a while? Ladies, have you ever read what they did in the materials that were required for putting that together? I mean, in my mind, the men are over here with the acacia wood and they're cutting it, and the women are over here with the threads and the material and they're sewing it. Is that fair for me to put men and women? It's not really the case, because God had selected a group of men and He had given them skills to be able to put this tabernacle together in a certain way. So it's going to take some time. All right, so while they are there, the whole purpose of me saying all this, while they're there, they get the book of Leviticus, okay? Maybe the book that you study the least in the Bible, the book of Leviticus, is given to Israel while they're at Mount Sinai, particularly given to the priests. And so as you read through this, it's very detailed. So Leviticus 23, do you have any chapter headings or paragraph headings up at the beginning of Leviticus chapter 23? What does it say? What does it say? Laws of the Sabbath. All right, so that's going to deal with a particularly like verse 3, I think, verses 2 and 3. Anything at the beginning of the chapter?
Feast of the Lord.
Okay, so that's, and chapter headings are just man putting in little headings there. That's not God inspiring those things. But that's what chapter 3 is about. Chapter 3 is going to tell you about these feasts that God, these holy days that God had put into place. So drop down to verse 33, and that's where we're going to spend a little bit of time, but be in some other places as well. When was the Feast of Tabernacles to take place? Verse 33, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, the 15th day of this seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles. And how long was it to last? Lasts for 7 days. All right, so some of their feast days, like the Day of Atonement, a holy day, Day of Atonement wasn't really a feast day, it was a holy day, but it lasted for a day, all right? But here, this particular holy day, this feast day, was to last for 7 days. When was it to take place? It was to start on the 15th day of the seventh month. So the seventh month was kind of busy for the children of Israel. Back up to verse 24. Look at verse 24. Speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, You shall have a Sabbath rest, a memorial of blowing trumpets. So what feast is that about? It's the feast of trumpets on the first day of the seventh month. Look down at verse 27. Also on the 10th day of the seventh month is what? Day of Atonement. Seventh month is kind of busy. There's a lot going on in the seventh month, and that's the way God designed. They typically have 12 months in their calendar. The beginning of their year is busy with holy days. They've got Passover, they've got the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and then about a month and a half later, they've got Pentecost or the Feast of Weeks. So it's busy at the front end of the year, beginning of the year. And then the seventh month is halfway through the year, and it's busy again with more holy days. You got trumpets, you got Day of Atonement, and then on the 15th day, you got Feast of Tabernacles. Okay, what's the deal? What's the deal with the Feast of Tabernacles? Do you remember that there were certain feasts, certain holy days, where God told them that all of the males needed to go to Jerusalem? Did they have to go there for every holy day? No, only on three holy days was every male supposed to go to Jerusalem. Do you remember what they are? I'll give you a hint. One of them is Feast of Tabernacles, and that's why I'm talking about it. You remember what the other two might be? What was the one where they put blood on their doorpost and they were to remember that particular event? Passover, all right? And then 50 days later, 50 days, what did you say?
Pentecost.
All right, so, and that's sometimes called the Feast of Weeks. And so those were the three times in the year that every Jewish male was supposed to make his way eventually to Jerusalem. But basically God said, wherever I put my name, wherever God chooses, every male is supposed to go there. So what is this Feast of Tabernacles? What is a tabernacle? It's a tent, okay? So they're having a Feast of Tabernacles. They're having a Feast of Tents. What does that mean? Are they eating tents? That would not be a good feast. They're building tents. They're living in tents. Now, some of you have lived in a... No, you haven't. You've gone camping in a tent. And you've gone camping in a tent long enough to be thankful that you don't live in a tent. You ever been camping in a tent and the rain that was supposed to be on the outside of the tent was on the inside of the tent? You ever been on one of those camping trips? Those are some fun trips. Why does God give them a feast day, a holy day, something for them to remember that involved them living in tents? I want us to talk about that tonight and just see what kind of lessons we can learn as we talk about this particular feast day. Go back to the book of Exodus for a second. Go back to Exodus 23. There is another name that's given for this particular feast. It's called the Feast of Tabernacles. But in Exodus 23, if you go to verse 14 in Exodus 23, do you have, again, I know all Bibles don't do this, but in Exodus 23 and verse 24, verse 14, Exodus 23, verse 14, do you have a little paragraph heading? What does it say? Three annual feasts. All right, they had more than just three annual feasts, but these three annual feasts are going to be the three annual feasts where every Jewish male was supposed to go to Jerusalem. And that's what he says in verse 14, three times you shall keep a feast to me in the year. The first one he mentions is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Another name of that is Passover. Verse 16, he mentions the Feast of Harvest. Another name for that is the Feast of Weeks. Another name for that is Pentecost. It's interesting that they had different names for things. Don't let that confuse you. There's purpose for it being called the Feast of Harvest, Feast of Weeks, and Pentecost, all the same thing. So the first one is Feast of Unleavened Bread or Passover. That's one. Feast of Harvest, Weeks, or Pentecost. That's two. The first fruits of your labor were in verse 16, which you have sown in the field. And then the third one is mentioned. But it's not called the Feast of Tabernacles. This is the same feast, just a different name. What is it called here in verse 16? Feast of Ingathering. God gives names to things to help you to understand clearly what it is. This is the feast of, that's descriptive, isn't it? It's the feast of ingathering. I wonder what that could be. Well, you keep reading, right? The feast of ingathering at the end of the year, when you have gathered, what's the word after gathered? Do you have the word in? When you have gathered in, this is the feast of ingathering, when you have gathered in the fruit of your labors from the field. And so what's happening in the Feast of Tabernacles? Well, another name for it is the Feast of Ingathering. And the reason it's being called that is because this is the end of harvest season. The end of their season has come. The end of their harvest season has come. And God says, when the end of your harvest season comes, I want you to commemorate it. I want you to celebrate it. And part of what you are supposed to be doing, go over to Deuteronomy chapter 16. So part of what you're doing on this day is, it is a remembering. Where did I tell you to go? Deuteronomy 16. This is a remembering of your harvest. It is remembering that you have gathered all of this in. So drop over to Deuteronomy 16. Do you know when you read through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, if we talk about there being parallel accounts of events in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, what does that mean when we say there's parallel accounts?
Four different people wrote it.
All right. So it's the same event, but it's mentioned, not necessarily all four mention it, maybe just two of them, maybe three of them. But, you know, let's take the feeding of the 5,000. That's the one miracle of Jesus other than his resurrection. Feeding of 5,000. Is the one miracle of Jesus that's mentioned in all four gospel accounts. But are there different details in each of the accounts? What about Jesus walking on the water? That's only mentioned by three of the gospel writers, but when you read about Jesus walking on the water, you get different details from the different writers. So what do? You take this, you take Matthew, you take Mark, you take John, you put them all now I got the full picture. Similar things here. We were just in Exodus 23 reading about the Feast of Tabernacles. We were in Leviticus 23 reading about the Feast of Tabernacles. Now we're in Deuteronomy chapter 16. Guess what we're going to read about? Feast of Tabernacles. So what's helpful to do is to gather it all together so you get the full picture. All right? Deuteronomy 16, starting in verse 13. You shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles for how many days? 7 days. When do you observe this? When you have gathered from your threshing floor and from your wine press. And when you have gathered all of these things, what does he tell them they are to do in verse 14? You shall do what? You are to rejoice in your feast. Is this a happy feast? All right, so follow this. This is the 7th month, 15th day of the month, Feast of Tabernacles. Happy event. 5 days before it, 7th month, 10th day of the month, 5 days before it. Remember what that? We talked about it on Sunday. Day of Atonement. The Day of Atonement. Was that a happy day? Was that a happy, joyful, rejoicing day? It was a day of remembering their sins. But now here we are 5 days later. God remembered their sins. But 5 days later, now they're remembering. They're bringing in all their harvest, and they are to rejoice in verse 14. Who's to rejoice in verse 14? Everybody. You and your son and your daughter and your male servant, your female servant, and the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, the widow. Who's left out? Nobody. Everybody who is within your gates is to rejoice. Verse 15, 7 days you shall keep a sacred feast of the Lord your God in the place which the Lord chooses. Not going to be Jerusalem for about 400 years. Because the Lord your God will do what in verse 15? He will bless you in what? Keep reading. And how much of your produce? How much of your produce? All of it. And how much of the work of your hands is God going to bless you? Do you have the word all twice in that verse? So when God has blessed you in all of your produce and all the work of your hands, look at it again at the end of verse 15. So that you surely do what? you rejoice. This is a joyous celebration of the Jews. What are they celebrating? All of the good stuff that's been growing, and they brought it in, and now the harvest is done, and we've got all this food and all of this produce. And it's not just celebrating it. Do I have this up here? Does this word up here? It's not just celebrating it. It is doing what? It is giving thanks to God for where it came from. Isn't that interesting that God plugs right into these Jews? They just got out of Egypt. They're no longer slaves. And God is giving them instructions about how to be His people. And He builds right here within the law a time when they are to give thanks to Him. So that they remember, hey, everything we have is from God. Is there any lessons in that for Christians? Yeah. Do we need to be a people who are intentional about our giving of thanks to God? Not, and when I use the word intentional, what I'm talking about, that we're not random, that we're not just, well, I might do it or not do it, I might remember, I might not remember, or, you know, I do it occasionally. But would it be a good idea for us as Christians to be more intentional in rejoicing and giving thanks to God for what He's given us? Yeah. What do we have from God?
Everything.
Every single thing. Go over to Colossians. We'll just look at one of these verses up here. Go over to Colossians chapter 3. Look in Colossians 3. And as you're turning there, finish this verse with me. Pray without what? Okay, so you know, that's 1 Thessalonians 5:17. The verse right before the one that's on the screen says, pray without ceasing. So that's the verse right before the one that's on the screen. The next verse in that chapter says, in everything, give thanks. So you pray about everything, and you give thanks about everything. Where did I tell you to go? Colossians 3, verse 15. Colossians 3, 15. Let the peace of God, or your Bible might have the word Christ, let the peace of God do what? Rule in your hearts. Who sits on the throne of your heart? Let the peace of God, the peace of Christ, rule in your hearts. To which also you were called in one body. And what does He say at the end of the verse? And be thankful. Look at verse 17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, doing what? Giving thanks to God the Father through Him. Twice in three verses, what is God telling us as Christians we need to do? We need to give thanks. Sometimes we're really good about asking for things. We're pretty good about asking. Are we just as good about giving thanks? I mean, we teach this to our kids, don't we? I mean, kids are really good about asking for things, aren't they? I mean, they're like professionals. They've been highly trained. I mean, from the moment they come out of the womb, they've been highly trained to ask for things. Do they have to be taught to give thanks? Do they have to be taught to ask for stuff? No, they just kind of do it instinctively, right? Instinctively, they just give me this. I want this. Can you do this for me? And sometimes they don't even ask. They just scream and yell until you decipher what they're screaming and yelling about. But do they have to be trained to say thank you? That's different. Do we ever outgrow that? The need to be intentional about, I need to give thanks more. Some of you are good about doing that. Some of you keep a thankful journal, a Thanksgiving journal, where you write down every day certain things that you are thankful for in that day. You know, that's a good practice. Because it makes you think. I knew a father, well, a father and mother, two parents, who at the end of the day would sit down with their very young children at the end of a day and say, tell us one thing that you're thankful for today. And they couldn't say the same thing they said the day before, and they couldn't say the same thing their sister said. They had to think. They had to come up with something. Wouldn't that be a good exercise for us? Intentional at the end of every day. What do I have to be thankful for today? And then just the other part of this as Christians is that I think what the Feast of Tabernacles helps us to do is to be reminded that everything that we have is from God and that God will always provide. Is that true? Is it overstating it? God always provides. Were you ever told, be careful, don't use the word always and never? Did your teachers ever tell you that? Be careful using the word always and why? Because that's the extreme. Boy, you always are mean to me. Really? No, not really. But I mean, we just throw that word out there, always and never. Those are two words you got to be careful using. So I don't want to overstate it. So is it overstating it that God always provides? It's not overstating it. Let me ask you, if you were holding a knife up over your son who you had just bound up and laid on an altar. Remember that story? And you're the parent who's got that knife up over your child. Go back there and ask Abraham. Abraham, that's not looking good. Abraham, does God always provide? How would Abraham answer that question? Did he?
He did.
What happened on that occasion? All right, so first of all, he provided Isaac. Didn't even have Isaac to begin with. But now he's got Isaac, and oh, no, okay, what's going to happen? Does Abraham bring that knife down into his child?
No.
Does not. Why not?
Because God said stop.
The angel of the Lord spoke to him, said, Abraham, and Abraham's like, I'm right here. Here am I. Do not kill him. So what did Abraham hear somewhere off in the distance? Oh, there's a ram stuck in the thicket. And so he goes and gets the ram and he sacrifices the ram. And you know what Abraham named that? You know when you're going into a new place and they don't have names on them, you know, they don't have the placards that say this is, when you're going to new places, you get to name them, right? So what does he name that place? Jehovah Jireh, which means, Stephen, the Lord will provide. Go back and ask Abraham when he's got that knife up. Abraham said, does God always provide?
Yeah.
I mean, but wait a minute. What if he had brought down that knife into his son? You mean God didn't provide?
No.
You know what Hebrews chapter 11 says?
Abraham said God would.
Abraham was going to do it because he figured, this isn't my problem, this is God's problem. God made a promise. And if he's going to have me kill my son, he's going to raise him from the dead. He's going to do something because God provides. He keeps his promises. So, Feast of Tabernacles. Come back to Leviticus chapter 23. But Feast of Tabernacles. Go to Numbers. First thing I want us to see, just first lesson, emphasizes the gratitude that we need to have for the provision of the Lord. Go to Numbers chapter 29. And here is yet another place, if you're like compiling some of these notations about where we read about the Feast of Tabernacles. Here's another place in Numbers chapter 29. And I think one of the things we see here, it kind of overlaps with what we just talked about. I think one of the things we see here about the Feast of Tabernacles is just that this feast emphasizes the joyous worship that we ought to have and the joyous sacrifice that we ought to be willing to make to God. All right, so we've read it already several times. How long did this feast last? How many days?
7 days.
That's a long time. What are they doing for 7 days? We're not going to read all of this. Do you have a heading over Numbers chapter 29, verse 12? Offerings at what? The Feast of Tabernacles. So here you have, starting in verse 29, going down almost to the end of the chapter, but stops short of a little bit. You have the offerings at the Feast of Tabernacles. And what you read about here, and we don't have time to read it all, but there are he gives them extensive details about the offerings that they are to make. I just want to read through some of this. Let this sink in for you. Let's start in verse 12. Numbers 29, 12. On the 15th day of the 7th month, you shall have a holy convocation. You're gathering together. It's a gathering. It's a holy gathering. You shall do no customary work. You shall keep a feast to the Lord for 7 days. You shall present a burnt offering, an offering made by fire, as a sweet aroma to the Lord. How many young bulls? 13. Keep that number in mind. 13 young bulls, 2 rams, and 14 lambs in their first year. They shall be without blemish. Their grain offering shall be a fine flour mixed with oil, 3/10 of an ephah for each of the 13 bulls, 2/10 for each of the 2 rams, and 1/10 for each of the 14 lambs. Also, 1 kid of the goats as a sin offering, besides the regular burnt offering, its grain offering, and its drink offering. Did you get all that? Isn't it nice that it was written down? They could go back and say, how many was that? All right. So verse 7, that's the first day. How many days does it last? 7 days. That's the first day. We're not done yet. Verse 17 goes to what day? Second day. How many young bulls? I told you to remember a number. How many young bulls on the first day? 13. Good. Second day, verse 17, present how many young bulls? 12 young bulls, but everything else is the same. 2 rams, 14 lambs the first year without blemish, the grain offering, the drink offering, the bulls, the 1 kid, et cetera, all the way through. Verse 20, what day? Third day, present how many bulls? 11. Are you getting the pattern here? 13, 12, 11, but everything else. So 11 bulls, verse 20, 2 rams, 14 lambs in their first year without blemish, the grain offering, the drink offering. Verse 23, fourth day, you present how many bulls? You don't even have to look. You can already know it's down to 10 bulls. He goes all the way. What I want you to see is not just, oh, I'm good at math because I can subtract 1 every day. What I want you to see is that God is giving detailed instructions. How many offerings are they making every single day? Dozens. Dozen. Why? What is this? I thought this was a joyous occasion. There's a lot of killing going on. No. This is a joyous occasion. And for them, this was celebrating everything that God had done for them. And they are bringing, they're called offerings here. What's another word for offerings? A gift. These were, I think I heard somebody say it, these were sacrifices. Now, literally, they're sacrificing, they're killing these animals. But are these sacrifices? They are to be in their first year without blemish. What is that? What is that? Why that? Perfect. The best you've got. Don't bring old Hop along who's 13 years old and he's overweight and he's got a limp because he's got a bad hip, you know, and he hasn't been doing much for anybody. So come here, Hop along. I'm going to sacrifice you to the Lord. That's not a sacrifice. You know, that's a mercy killing. I mean, that's not hurting you. That's not anything coming out of your pocket. But all of this was them sacrificing to God. Now, when we hear the word sacrifice, we think, oh boy, that's hard. No, they were doing this voluntarily to show God how much they loved Him, to show God how much they depended upon Him. It's in Deuteronomy 16, but we won't go back over there. But what God said about this feast is that you don't appear before the Lord empty-handed. That's Deuteronomy 16:16. You don't appear before the Lord empty-handed. You come before the Lord, they're there to worship Him. And when they come before the Lord to worship Him, guess what? They don't come there without something to give. Without something to give to the Lord. Yes. The Jews had a variety of offerings that they would make. If you go back to Leviticus chapters 1 through 7, it's going to talk about the various offerings that they would make. And it's not just Leviticus 1 through 7. I mean, you continue on in the book. That these offerings were made, they were to be accompanied by an additional meat offering, an additional drink offering. That's in addition to the bulls and the lambs and the rams that were being offered. So, I mean, think about, and the grain. What is that? That's something from about everything that you have. It's from the flock. It's from the field. It's from the vineyard. What else is there? I mean, you've got the animals, you've got the crops, where you're growing your food, and you got your vineyard where you're growing your drink. And God says, I want a part of everything that you have. Does he say the same thing to us? I'm not talking about crops and animals and drink. Does God say to us, I want a part of everything that you have? God wants to be involved in our lives. And so should Christians be individuals that offer joyous worship to our God? Not come into this place grudgingly of necessity. Well, I got to go to church, but I'll call you when I get out. Hopefully that preacher doesn't go too long and we'll go do something fun afterwards. Because, man, what do you mean do something fun afterwards? I come in this place, this ought to be fun. This ought to be a place of joyous celebration every time I'm here. Not, I've got to give money. I get to give. I get to offer. I want to do this. And that was these people. Their worship was not something that they bemoaned doing. Their worship was something that they longed to do. We only have 5 minutes. Let me get to the whole point about the tabernacles, okay? Let me get to the whole point. Sometimes they're called booths, all right? A booth, same kind of thing. It's a tabernacle. It's a tent. I'm just going to put all of this up here because David Brown is only giving me 5 minutes. Just kidding, David. That's what you're supposed to do. You're only supposed to give me 5 minutes. All right, so what was the tabernacle? Go to Nehemiah chapter 8 really quick. This one, I don't want to miss this because this is one of my favorite things about this. The whole reason I wanted to talk about Feast of Tabernacles tonight is Nehemiah chapter 8. So flip over there. And so this was a feast. Why they were supposed to dwell in tents for 7 days. Why? One, to remember that they came out of Egypt. And when they came out of Egypt, what were they dwelling in? Tents. So this feast was to help them to remember God brought us out of the land of Egypt. And what else? When he brought us out of the land of Egypt, he provided for us. If you live in a tent, do you feel a little, if you're living in a tent in a strange place, like in a wilderness where you've never been, do you feel a little vulnerable? I mean, you don't have cement walls. You know, it's kind of interesting. Being up in Tennessee a few weeks ago and seeing new building projects going on and all of the framing, the wooden framing that they use on their houses up in Tennessee. I'm like, oh, look, there's wooden frames on their houses. It's like, haven't seen that in a long time. Why? Do we do wooden framing down here?
Nope.
All right. So, I mean, can you imagine being in your tent camping? You're in a new place. You're kind of vulnerable. Did God protect them? He's protecting them. He's providing for them. So even after these Jews grew up, right? Even after they're in the promised land for generations, and they go and build their houses and they live in houses, they live in nice houses. Every year, every Jewish male is supposed to go back to Jerusalem, and every year they are to celebrate this feast in Jerusalem. Don't go stay in a hotel room when you get to Jerusalem. You go and you build. You make your own tent out of branches. You don't go down and buy canvas. You make it out of the branches and you live in there for 7 days. I got a nice house back home. Yeah, you live in that 7 days. Why? You need to remember God. You need to remember your God and what he's done for you. He delivered you, he provided for you, he protected you, and even in the wilderness, he did all that. So anyway, Numbers chapter 8. We don't have time to read this, but the context of Numbers 8 is that God's people are coming back to the promised land after being in captivity to Babylon for how many years? 70 years in Babylon, right? So they're 70 years in Babylonian captivity. And they're coming out of that. They're coming back to Jerusalem. Ezra comes and he has the book of the law in Nehemiah chapter 8. He stands up to read it. And when he reads the book of the law, what was the posture of the people? What did they do? They stood up. Can you imagine standing up and listening to the law being read all day long? That's what they're doing. But anyway, drop down to verse 13 real quick. On the second day, they did that the first day. Now they're doing it the second day. Second day, the heads of the fathers' houses of all the people with the priests and the Levites were gathered to Ezra in order to understand the words of the law. And they found, verse 14, they found written in the law, which the Lord had commanded by Moses, that the children of Israel should dwell in booths, tents, tabernacles, during the feast of the seventh month, and that they should announce and proclaim in all their cities and in Jerusalem, saying, go out in the mountains and bring olive branches and branches of olive trees, myrtle branches, palm branches, branches of leafy trees to make booths as it is written. So they went out and they did that. Verse 17, so the whole assembly of those who returned from captivity, they made booths and they sat in their booths. Look in the middle of verse 17. This is what I want you to see. For since the days of Joshua, they had not done so. They hadn't been doing this. But now they go back to the law and they read the law. And they're just sitting, not really, sorry, they're standing there, they're listening to Ezra, and maybe he's reading Leviticus 23. Maybe he's reading Exodus 23. Maybe he's reading Numbers 29. Maybe he's reading Deuteronomy 16, one of those places where we were. And they're just standing there listening. What did he just say? 15th day of the seventh month, we're supposed to do what? Build tents? We've never done that. Oh, we've never even heard about that being done for hundreds of years. But if the law says to do it, guess what we've got to do? We're going to go and do it. Look at the end of the chapter. They did this according to the prescribed manner. How did they know what God wanted them to do? Did they have details? We just looked at all sorts of, and we didn't even see all the details tonight. God gave them specific details. Here's what I want you to do and how I want you to do it. Did they have everything they needed to know how to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles all those hundreds of years later? Could they do it exactly the same way that Israel did it at the very beginning that we just read about? Couldn't they do it? Exactly the same, right? Make the application today. What about Jesus building his church? Not a tabernacle, his church. Did Jesus give any instructions, guidelines? Did he give a pattern? Did he give a prescribed manner for his church? How it's to function, how it's to worship, how it's to be organized? Where is that found? Where's that pattern, those instructions found? Same place they found them, in the law of God. So what would happen today if people just went back and just read the New Testament? And all they did was, oh, if that's the way God says to do it, then that's the way we're going to do it. It'd be the same thing that they did in Nehemiah chapter 8. They restored the Feast of Tabernacles back to God's original plan. Can God's church be restored today all the way back to its original plan? Yeah. Because we've got every detail that God wanted us to have to do that. What would have happened if, I know, just give me a second here. What would have happened if they had changed just one little thing about the 7 days, that's a long time. My wife won't go for that. Woo, she is not going to be happy. Let's just, 4 days. Four days. I'll get the message. I'll get the understanding. It'll mean something to me. 4 days. Would it be the Feast of Tabernacles? Nope, it'd be their own thing. Do we have a right to come to God's Word and say, oh, I know that's what it says, but yeah, maybe we'll just twist it a little bit. Nope, then it's not God's plan anymore. It's our plan. There's a whole lot that I wanted to talk about Feast of Tabernacles tonight, and we got to that much of it. Cool. All right. Thank you all for being here tonight. Go enjoy living in your houses and not in your tents tonight. All right?